your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. In the next hour, Dr. Rosenthal and her guests cover both the common and the not-so-common health issues you want and need to know. Get your pencils ready. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.
Hello, welcome to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, the program that reminds anyone coping with health problems we are not alone. The goal of this program is to discuss both common and not so common health issues with the experts who really know what they're talking about. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. I have a long career as a medical journalist and am the author of over 30 consumer health books. I have a PhD in medical ethics and medical sociology and direct the program for bioethics and patients' rights at the University of Kentucky. Today we are devoting our show to the subject of hirsutism in women, also known as excessive hair growth or male pattern hair growth in women. Our guests today are Dr. Ricardo Aziz, who is director of the Center for Androgen-Related Disorders at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. He's professor and vice chair of the Department of OBGYN and professor in the Department of Medicine at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. He's also executive director of the Androgen Excess Society, a professional organization devoted to research in this area. Then joining us for the second half of the show is Patsy Kirby, who is the executive director of the American Electrology Association, who will explain how electrology works as a permanent hair removal method. So let's begin with Dr. Aziz. Welcome.
Hi, Sarah.
I'd like to start with a discussion of what exactly does hirsutism mean, so we can distinguish this from simply culturally unacceptable hair growth in women, such as underarm hair and that sort of thing. And then I thought maybe we could just focus on the causes of hirsutism.
Well, I'll certainly be happy to. You know, you'd think that the definition of hirsutism would be something fairly simple. You know, somebody is too hairy and it's abnormal. But in reality, as you noted, it's actually sort of a continuum. You know, some women have a little bit too much hair growth that they don't like, but it isn't really medically concerning. Other women have, in fact, a fair amount of hair growth indicating a medical condition, and they really aren't aware of it because they assume that it is ethnic. But in fact, even when you take this continuum, there clearly is a group of women, somewhere in the order of 5 to 7% of women in the United States, that have hair growth in a type that, in fact, indicates that they may have an underlying medical condition. And so the hair growth that we tend to look, and the one that is most present, tends to be face, the upper lip or chin, the chest, the abdomen, and on the back. You know, hairs are coarse.
On the back.
On the back.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
In fact, hairs that are coarse, darker, firmer, longer, these kind of hairs are what we call terminal hairs, hairs that are not normal in most women. And so those hair growth in those areas often indicate a medical condition.
Now, So basically, when somebody sees the word hirsutism, we're talking about abnormal hair growth in women. Would you say?
Well, it is. Although
versus what, like in other words, there's a normal continuum where some women are hairier than others, and then there's truly something that is abnormal.
Well, that's why I think it's a little bit hard to put a single type of number. We,
okay.
For example, those of us who do research in hirsutism use a visual scale to score, if you would, the amount of terminal hairs that women would have in areas that are primarily masculine, you know, like I said, the upper lip and the chin and so on and so forth. But even that score isn't exact. I mean, not everybody who has a 5 or a 6 on that score means that they have hirsutism, you know. And so all I'm saying simply is that it is a continuum. For example, we have studied women who complain of unwanted hair growth. They had hair growth that they didn't want, they didn't like it, they knew something was not right. When we examined them visually, they didn't seem to have very much. I mean, they had some, but not enough to, in our categorization, in our medical, they did not have enough to really say you have hirsutism. But even then, 50% of those women who had unwanted hair growth had a medical condition.
I see.
So in fact, that is why it is a continuum. Now, clearly, some women have significant amount of hair growth that is too much, right? And that is what we call hirsutism. They have clearly a male pattern type of hair like that of a man. But others simply have unwanted hair growth, and it becomes fuzzy as to when is it, just an ethnic variation versus when is it too much, and that's where the medical evaluation needs to help us decide.
I see. So when you're looking at a patient that you would describe as being truly hirsute, what would that person look like? What would that woman look like?
Well, in the person who is hirsute will most frequently have hair growth on the chin and on the upper lip. And the hairs will be dark and coarse and maybe measure about half of an inch. If you let them grow with no control, they'd be half of an inch or longer. That person may also have frequently hair on the lower tummy. You know, the hair from the pubic hairs would seem to be growing up toward the belly button. That's what we call the male scutcheon. Those are the most frequent common areas. Of course, you know, hair growth on the chest may also be a problem, although I will tell you that lots of women have some hairs around the nipples, and that doesn't indicate an abnormality in and of itself.
And why does the hair sort of around the nipples occur? What is the reason for that?
Well, I think, you know, hairs in general are a protective organ. So it is not unusual to have hair follicles growing around the nipple that actually are protecting the nipples, which are very sensitive for breastfeeding and so on and so forth. So the reality is that's probably why we end up having some hair growth around the nipple.
Okay. So basically then, I guess that a lot of women that could be medically defined as hirsute are already well on their way to, they may have it in hand to conceal it.
Absolutely.
Because they found cosmetic treatments available.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's why we do pay attention to women who say, you know what, my hair growth is too much, I've noticed it getting worse. And even when we examine her, we're not quite sure that she actually have as much as we'd like to see or as we define as a properly hirsute woman. But even then, they do merit attention.
Okay. Now I guess just to get into, so the causes of hirsutism are varied. Is that correct?
And that's correct.
If we were to look at the most common causes, what would those be?
Well, you know, hirsutism, as a word would or as a condition would assume, generally relates to excess male hormone effect. Either the woman is producing too much male hormones, or her skin is overly sensitive to the male hormones that she has.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, but it is always reflecting a male hormone type of effect. Now,
I was just going to say, that is it possible then that women could get tested to see if if they had excessive male hormones, and then the test could come out normal, but it may be that their skin is reacting differently?
That is correct. And I'll mention a word about testing, because we have to be very careful when we talk about testing for male hormones. You know, the methods of measuring male hormones in the blood are not very exact. And the reason is that male hormones are very tiny molecules. They're very tiny. They get into fat and so on and so forth. So the body doesn't tend to recognize them as foreign substances. And what that means from our point of view is that it is very hard to develop good tests to detect male hormone levels in women. So sometimes we have women who clearly have a medical condition, for example, polycystic ovary syndrome, and they do not have abnormal hormone levels. About a fifth of all women with polycystic ovary syndrome do not have high levels of male hormone in their blood.
I see.
I mean, that we can measure.
Now,
that doesn't mean that it's not high for them. It just simply means that, as far as we can tell, they're not higher than normal.
I see. Okay, so this presents an interesting, this presents, I guess, a classic frustrating problem in that many women are misdiagnosed, or it's missed diagnoses of this issue. Would that be
That's correct.
Sorry, we're gonna have to take a break now. My guest is Dr. Ricardo Aziz, an expert on hirsutism, also known as excessive hair growth in women. For more information about hirsutism or unwanted hair, we suggest starting with my book, Women and Unwanted Hair, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk more about medical treatments available for women with hirsutism and a little bit more about the causes. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Stay mentally, physically, and emotionally fit with Younger Every Day. Hosted by Dr. Bob Payson. Broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Younger Every Day will offer you alternative solutions for a variety of health issues, all backed by clinical, scientific, and medical data. Dr. Payson and other expert guests will inform and inspire people of all ages to look and feel better. Younger Every Day. Think clear. Feel strong. Grow Younger with Dr. Bob Payson, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of hirsutism in women, also known as excessive hair growth. We are talking with Dr. Ricardo Aziz, a world expert in hirsutism. And when we picked up, or when we left for the break, we were talking about the causes of hirsutism, and I believe we left off with some of the confusing issues with testing and how hormone levels are not that easy to detect in terms of having a norm for male hormone levels.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, in general, very few cases of hirsutism actually are not linked to what we call a medical problem. You know, there is a condition that we call idiopathic hirsutism, which simply means hirsutism that we don't know why it happens.
I see.
In medical terms. But in that is hirsutism where everything else is normal. The person's hormones are normal, her ovulation is normal, her ovaries look normal, and that is actually fairly infrequent. Only about 1 in 20 women with hirsutism actually have idiopathic hirsutism. The rest, 95% of the women with hirsutism, will actually have a medical condition. Now, the medical conditions, as you noted, are different. The most common one, the one that actually 80% of women with hirsutism have, is the polycystic ovary syndrome.
80% is, wow, that's an outstanding statistic.
That's actually, in other words, yeah. The vast majority of women with hirsutism will eventually have the polycystic ovary syndrome. Not all of them, but many of them do. And, you know, polycystic ovary syndrome is a very common disorder. It affects about 1 in 15 women in the United States. It is a condition in which the ovaries and maybe the adrenal glands overproduce male hormones. Many of these women have what we call insulin resistance. They produce too much insulin to keep their sugar levels normal. And so that tends to create this condition where they have irregular periods, irregular ovulation, excess hair growth, and things of that nature.
If polycystic ovarian syndrome is sort of attacked from a an insulin resistance standpoint, in other words, if you treat insulin resistance, does that in fact treat the hirsutism?
Well, in fact, it doesn't do that very well.
No, it doesn't.
Only about 60% of women with polycystic ovary syndrome truly have significant insulin resistance. But even if you just treat the women who you think have the insulin resistance, you know, the decline in hair growth with the insulin-sensitizing drugs, you know, the metformins, metformin and other type of drugs similar to that, modestly affects hair growth, but not very much. But to be fair, birth control pills alone only modestly improve hair growth in women with polycystic ovary syndrome.
I see. So what would you recommend?
Well, generally, to treat the patient who has hirsutism, you have to use combination hormonal therapy. You have to use some medication to bring down the hormones, and that is birth control pills or sometimes even an insulin-sensitizing drug like metformin. But on top of that, you have to add something called an anti-androgen, a male hormone blocker. And those include things like spironolactone and flutamide and finasteride. In this country, we primarily use spironolactone.
I see. Okay. So basically, these would sort of be the hormonal medical treatments available.
Correct.
And that will sort of calm down the hormonal disruption.
I think it's important for patients when they want treatment for hirsutism to understand a couple of things. The main reason for medical evaluation is to find out what's going on hormonally, medically. Do you have a condition that is significant that needs care and evaluation? The second thing is that the hormonal therapy will stop it from getting worse, because clearly you don't want it to have it continue to get worse. And over time, the hair growth does get slowly better. But clearly, you know, hairs that are there will stay long-term. You know, you'll have some improvement in hair growth, but they're not going to disappear in the majority of cases. That's why, of course, you need to then invoke treatment with electrology and other things like that to permanently remove whatever hairs are there.
I see. Now, just in looking at sort of the ages of women who present with polycystic ovarian disease?
Well, it certainly is not a disease. We don't use the term disease anymore because we actually don't exactly know what causes it, and so disease is for things that we know that what they have a cause. So it's polycystic ovary or ovarian syndrome, however.
Ovarian syndrome.
It's a syndrome.
So how old are the women that present with this? Is it?
Most women with polycystic ovary syndrome present between the ages of 14 and 40, something of that nature.
Okay, so they're presenting with this at a time when hirsutism is not a desirable quality.
That's right.
So it can also have a lot of psychosocial complications.
Well, we recently did a study of about 400 women with polycystic ovary syndrome looking at their quality of life and what they felt impacted on their quality of life. And after obesity, after overweightness, hirsutism was the number one cause of reduced quality of life. I mean, you can imagine it. If you're a 16-year-old girl and you're having to have unwanted hairs, you have to shave or pluck or whatever it is so you can go out on a date, it doesn't really do well for your psychosocial development.
Right, right. Would you go as far as to say that the treatment of hirsutism is an important psychosocial therapy?
Well, I think it's very important. I mean, we also showed in that study that I mentioned that, in fact, treatment of the hair growth, in this case it was with an insulin sensitizer, even though the effect was modest, actually did improve significantly quality of life in these women. So, yes, it's very important to treat the hirsutism. That's why I think it's important for patients and for doctors to realize that it isn't just a cosmetic thing. It isn't just, well, here you have it, and don't worry, you're just too hairy. Because it's very important, because it's a marker for health problems, potentially a marker for polycystic ovary syndrome and adrenal hyperplasia and other disorders, and also a very important barrier to a happy life.
Now, I guess for women listening to this, who is the ideal practitioner to do some testing and treating this disorder?
Well, that's actually a little bit of a tricky question, and the reason is that actually it's a multidisciplinary type of disorder. You know, it's a disorder that crosses boundaries with pediatricians and internal medicine and obstetrician gynecologists and so on. The person's the general specialty who is most knowledgeable about polycystic ovary syndrome tends to be the what we call the reproductive endocrinologist, the hormonal experts, the experts in hormone diseases of women. So I would say that about half of reproductive endocrinologists are relatively familiar with polycystic ovary syndrome and hirsutism and so on.
And is interest interest of the practitioner an important feature in the treatment of hirsutism in particular, or dealing with PCOS and hirsutism?
It is very much so. That's why I think it's important for patients to check with their doctor's office beforehand, see if they have a special interest in treating patients with polycystic ovary syndrome, because patients with polycystic ovary syndrome and hirsutism and other androgen excess disorders do need special care. They need careful evaluation. They need to understand, the doctor needs to understand the limitations of the testing. The ideal person to go to is obviously somebody who has a particular special interest in these disorders, but there's really, in the United States, less than 25 or 30 physicians nationally that actually have a particular interest, you know. And so I don't want to just tell our patients to just seek those people. If they're close to one of those doctors, that's great, and if they're not, then I would seek either a reproductive endocrinologist or, in some circumstances, a medical endocrinologist, as long as they have an interest in the disorder.
Now, if we're in the time we have left, so we've talked about 80% of women with hirsutism have PCOS. About 1% have idiopathic hirsutism. What about the remaining portion?
Right. About 80% have polycystic ovary syndrome. About 5% have idiopathic.
5%. Excuse me.
And another 3 to 5%, somewhere around maybe 2 to 3%, depending on your ethnicity, will have something called a 21-hydroxylase-deficient non-classic adrenal hyperplasia. It's a long name to tell us that it is a genetic disorder of the adrenal gland, where the adrenal gland is the one primarily overproducing the male hormones.
I see. So some of it is genetic, are there any other conditions of note?
Rarely you'll have tumors. Tumors that overproduce male hormones, but almost always tumors will present fairly dramatically. The person will be fairly normal, and then 2 months later they're going to have a beard, and then 3 months later they're going to start balding. It's very fast.
I see.
Other women, they will be perfectly normal, and all of a sudden into the menopause they'll begin to have a lot of hair growth. So although tumors is what people tend to worry the most about, the reality is that they occur less than 1 in 500 women with hirsutism. It's something that needs to be evaluated. The doctor needs to be aware of this, but in fact, it's relatively rare. Other causes include the use of male hormones. You know, we've gotten so popular about using DHEA and androstenedione and it's the rejuvenation drugs that, in fact, many women are taking them in excess and becoming hirsute.
They're taking them, so in other words, in the postmenopausal crowd,
perimenopausal crowd. I mean, at least in California, we have many women who are taking these drugs just because they are aging and they're not really yet in menopause, and they feel that this will give them increased stamina and so on, which may be a certain level true, but it does have side effects, including acne and hirsutism.
I see. A subject for another show, which we will be doing, I understand that a lot of women are turning to male sort of testosterone, I believe, for libido.
Well, there's a lot of that, and that you're right.
Okay, so that's what you mean by
discussion, but that is true.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to thank you very much. We're going to take a break now. My guest has been Dr. Ricardo Aziz, an expert on hirsutism, also known as excessive hair growth in women. For more information about hirsutism or unwanted hair, we suggest starting with my book, Women and Unwanted Hair, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk more about electrology with our next guest, Patsy Kirby, Executive Director of the American Electrology Association. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of hirsutism in women, also known as excessive hair growth. We have just been joined by Patsy Kirby, who's the Executive Director of the American Electrology Association, and she's going to be with us for the second half of the show. So, Patsy, welcome.
Thank you, Sarah, for having me.
I guess what I would like to do is let's focus on what electrology is, because I think a lot of people probably are confused as to what this process involves, and then we'll just sort of see how long that takes.
Okay.
I know it's complex.
Okay. Well, electrolysis is permanent hair removal, and what an electrologist does is she inserts a probe into the follicle. Now, you have to remember that it's very, very small, a follicle. And she usually uses some type of magnification, and she applies the current to the bottom of the follicle. And the reason why she's applying the current there is because there are dermatitis cells that cause the hair to grow. And that's what we are trying to eliminate, are those cells. Now, what the person feels is a little warm heat sensation. We have the state-of-the-art equipment today. It is so modernized. It's very, very comfortable. And then we apply the current, and then we take the probe out, take the hair out, and move on to the next one. So the treatments are really very individual to each person, and the currents are very comfortable, and it is permanent.
So let's walk through kind of what just off the top of my head, let's say somebody comes in and they want to be treated for kind of a patch of hair in the chin area.
Okay.
They've been evaluated by, let's say they do have PCOS, as Dr. Aziz said, 80% of women with hirsutism seem to present with that. So they're on their treatment, and now they just want to get rid of the hair growth. How, from the day they walk in, how long will it take for, you know, let's say maybe 10 hairs to be completely eliminated?
Well, the process is that when you come in, we have a consultation process. So we explain exactly what is expected for our treatment, what aftercare is, and then we explain the whole process of it. And then if the hairs, we need to know if the hairs have been tweezed or waxed or what they've done previously to it, because, and what type of skin they have. So we evaluate all of that.
Okay. Let's just pause right there, because I think you're touching on some really important information that a lot of women may miss. So if they have been, let's say the answer is, oh, I've been tweezing it for years. What do you say?
All right. Then we're going to ask them to please stop tweezing, and if they could just cut the hairs, if they have a lot of chin hairs and we're unable to give them a full treatment the first time. Because sometimes when women with PCOS, they sometimes have full beards, Sarah. And so it's almost impossible at one sitting treatment to treat the whole face.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So essentially you're going to be sort of focusing on areas then.
Yes, if it is a person that's very hirsute and has a full beard, you're going to do what really is bothering them the most. You have to realize that the person, when they come to us for our consultation, we're going to talk about the cycles of hair growth and the quantity of hair that presents on their skin. We need to, you know, decide if it's hereditary or if it's hormonal or if it is PCOS for them. And if they have already been to a physician that has explained that to them and they're now here to receive permanent hair removal, then we've already, you know, gone over that hump. So now we need to know what is really bothering you. Is it the hair on your upper lip that's the most bothering you, or is it the hair on the chin, or, you know, exactly where it is? And that's where we're going to focus.
Okay. So it's my understanding, or at least it should be my understanding, considering I've written about this, that you're not going to completely kill the hair follicle with one single treatment.
Yeah.
That it sort of grows and cycles, so you kind of have to get it in its different growth phases?
Sometimes, yes. But most majority of time when we're treating somebody, now if they've been tweezing, Sarah, their hair is not going to be all up at the top of their skin. So when we treat a hair, we can oftentimes kill it the first time. But if the hair is been tweezed like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, it's going to take a while for that hair to surface.
I see.
So that's why it's on a regular appointment. We're going to work on a schedule with this person.
I see. Okay.
And so it can be a weekly. It could be twice weekly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just to understand a little bit about sort of the what it is that you're killing in the hair follicle, a hair that you can kill, a hair that you can treat, you can just zap it in the first treatment, what does that hair look like?
All right. Oftentimes it is just emerging out of the follicle.
Okay.
A lot of times it will be, if they've been tweezing, it's
so
going to be
like
very
fine, thin, like is it?
It can be all different sizes, Sarah.
Okay.
It can be very, very coarse, and it can be very, if you think about the hair on the side of your face, how much finer it is than maybe the little hairs that you have on your chin that have maybe starting to get coarser and that are becoming androgen sensitive. And they will just, all of a sudden, it's like you wake up and here is this dark hair there. So what does most women do? They're embarrassed with it, so they tweeze it.
So they tweeze it.
Right. Yes. And then oftentimes, what it does is it distorts the hair follicle. And what it does, it's like when you have something that yanks on you, the cells themselves are not mature enough. So what they're going to do is try to regerminate and be a little bit stronger. And especially if you're having some hormone problems and the testosterone or the androgens are in your bloodstream, it's going to cause the hair to get coarser.
I see. Okay. So I guess the first part of it is, so when you first seek out an electrologist, the first part of it sounds like there's a lot of consultation,
yes,
and planning involved in sort of the, you know, the various areas. And what are the costs looking like today for electrology? I understand it sort of varies from state to state, but what are women typically looking at investment?
Right. Let's say we have as little as a 15-minute treatment, where that can cost you $20, all the way up to $30 for
a
15-minute treatment.
How many hairs can you get in 15 minutes?
Quite a bit.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes.
So you can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, you can.
You can do a whole area, like side of face or things like that.
Yeah, well, let's just take the chin proper, and let's say that somebody is, it's kind of hard to paint that picture of, it's not scattered, but they're close together, and there's a lot there. I would say it would probably be an hour treatment, and that hour treatment, because the demographics are so different in the fees, but you would be paying probably from $50 all the way up to $75 to $80 an hour, and in some areas it's a little bit more.
Okay, so obviously access issues might be problematic for some women. So again, I guess the consultation would be a very important part, where you sort of look at what area do you want to invest in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, some women don't even come to an electrologist because they have a lot of facial hair. They come because they want their underarms done or their bikini line done.
And how do you are there any areas that are off limits, do you think, as an electrologist? Are there areas that are that you would sort of would you turn clients away?
One of the things is that we have always been told that we do not want to go up into the nasal area very far, because that's a very simple, it's not simple, excuse me, it is a very sensitive area, and it has just a thin membrane.
You said nasal area?
Yes.
So women actually come to get hair removed from inside their nose, their nostrils?
Yes, Sarah. I had a lady.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, I had a client that her nose flared up, and it was like open quite a bit.
Oh.
And you could see into where the bottom part, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact name of what you call it medically, but she was tweezing the hairs out, and she wanted them permanently removed.
I see. Okay, so then that would obviously not be. And I understand that electrolysis is very safe for the breast and nipple area, because we were talking about that earlier in the show, that a lot of women have hair, you know, growing around their nipple. That isn't necessarily abnormal, but I can see why it would be very problematic.
Yes.
Sort of cosmetically, so there's no issues with that area at all.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
It might. Could you give us a little? I think that a lot of listeners may also be interested in knowing how old the profession actually is.
Well, the profession is at least 120 years old. Yeah, we're very old, unfortunately. But you know what? Our technology is so state-of-the-art today that our techniques have improved. We have many of our electrologists are using magnification, like telescope, you know, type, and we have excelled in these last few years.
See, I guess I would say that you know, from a safety standpoint, I think that we like to see things that have been around for a long time, because 120 years is also a long time to observe problems. As opposed to, you know, something that's just come out and it's only 10 or 20 years old, it can take a long time, you know, to see if there's any adverse effects. So we've had a really long time to look at electrology. And I guess we've concluded, just in terms of, you know, the medical profession and your profession, it is a safe removal procedure.
Absolutely. We're tried and true. We do permanent hair removal, and nobody else can claim that, Sarah. We can, and we have done this for, like I said, 120 years, and we are so knowing about the skin. Many patients that come in, we're the first people that see them, and we are the ones that send them to the physicians and say, you know, there's a little problem here. You know, you need to go see an endocrinologist about your hair problem. And so we have been on the forefront for so many years, and it's helped so many women.
Would many electrologists then, I guess, would they have referral lists, sort of lists of doctors that they may send women to in their area if they're noticing, this may be a hormonal issue, and are you allowed to actually give names of doctors out?
Absolutely. We usually connect with the doctors in our vicinity, in our area. We usually go and speak with them and tell them our situation with our patients, and we do a referral basis, and many physicians will refer to our electrologists also. So it's we're helping the patient become hair-free and feeling really positive about themselves once again, because it's so detrimental to so many women.
So likewise, I would imagine that with some, oh, we're going to have to take another break. This is a fascinating conversation. My guest right now is Patsy Kirby, Executive Director of the American Electrology Association. For more information about hirsutism or unwanted hair, we suggest starting with my book, Women and Unwanted Hair, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk more about finding an electrologist and best candidates. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Steps to a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Growing Up in America explores the challenges, risks, benefits, and differences this generation of children face each day. Hosted by veteran pediatric emergency physician and father of four, Dr. Charles Nzeka, this show is for parents, teens, and children. It crosses each generation. By exploring the unique aspects of matriculation within this current generation, we hope to find answers and ways of optimizing this experience for today's generation. Growing Up in America with Dr. Charles Nzeka broadcasts each Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time. For Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back. to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of hirsutism in women, also known as excessive hair growth. We are talking with Patsy Kirby, Executive Director of the American Electrology Association, who is with us for the second half of this show. And, Patsy, we left off talking about the whole process of electrology. I guess what I wanted to focus on for in our remaining time is looking at candidates for electrology, sort of best candidates or, you know, those kinds of things, and also the education of electrologists and finding an electrologist. So maybe we can first start with a candidates issue.
All right. There is virtually everyone can have electrolysis.
Okay.
I have a really great story to share with you and your on the radio that I started to say your guests. I guess they are your guests, aren't they?
Listeners, yeah.
Yeah. And a young girl came in, and she was 9 years old, and she had a little hair on her upper lip, about four on each side, maybe six. And her mother brought her because she was being teased terribly by her classmates. And so she got up on my table, and I worked on her, and I took two hairs off of each side of her upper lip. And I gave her the mirror, and I said, you know, her body was a little tense and everything, and when she saw the couple of hairs gone, she said, oh, can you do more? Can you do more? And so I removed all the rest of her hairs on her upper lip that were bothering her, and she was the happiest child when she left my office.
You know, and I guess she hadn't obviously tweezed them, so they were in perfect,
yes,
killable condition.
Absolutely. And look at how happy that child was.
Okay, so in other words, there's no age limits, no barriers in terms of skin color or those kinds of things.
Absolutely not. We can work on any type of skin. Of course, if there are some problems with the skin or somebody is having, you know, an issue like a psoriasis or something, we always ask them, you know, maybe have your phone number to the physician, that's your physician, and we can discuss, you know, the situation with them. So we're treating, we're in unison with the physician, with the patient, and with ourselves, so we can get the best treatment for that person.
Well, we didn't touch really on, is there any aftercare that's important? I mean, are there any creams or things that people should be doing after treatments?
Yes, most electrologists will be putting an aftercare solution on. Some of it's clear, some of it's little makeup tone. It depends on the electrologist and what they feel that really, you know, can help the process of the skin calming down, because you do get a little slight redness with it. It's usually gone within an half an hour. If somebody's very, very fair, it just usually, because I'm very fair, and I have treatments on my upper lip, and usually I'd be just red for, you know, about 20 minutes, and then it just calms right down, and it's like you can be at work and nobody knows you even had a treatment.
I see.
It's wonderful.
Let's get into the training and the education of an electrologist. How does one become an electrologist?
Many states license electrologists, and there are a few states that do not. But most states have schools that are approved to educate the person that lives in that particular state. And then they have to go through those hours, those educational hours. They have hands-on, and then they have theory. And most of the states do a test after you have completed the course. The test is usually a written and a practical. Some states may just give a written exam. And once that's passed, then they receive their license. And we also have a certification program. The AEA has put together, the American Electrology Association has put together, and it's called a Certified Professional Electrologist. And we board certified electrologists, even ones that are licensed from a state. This is like one step above. So we have put this together, this exam. It's a written exam, and they take that exam, and when they pass it, we issue them a certificate. And part of the criteria becoming board-certified electrologists is that they have to have 75 hours of education in the field of electrology for a five-year period before they can recertify.
So 75 hours of actually of seeing clients or like
no,
a practical
educational courses.
Just educational courses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so what would be some of the so what's the content of some of the education?
Well, be Dr. Aziz. He would be a great lecturer. Someone like you that has written that wonderful book. Also we have people that work or that are electrologists that lecture to us. I give lectures on the different modalities that are used in the process of removing hair permanently. We go through everything, even business courses to help them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess now in terms of finding an electrologist and what so ideally what one would be looking for is a certified electrologist. So they would have this, is it CPE?
Yes, it is.
CPE. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Certified professional electrologist. So that would be the credential that one might look for. And what states and you had mentioned that there are some states that do not have, is it either licensing or certification, which?
It's licensing.
Okay. And
yeah.
Which states do not have licensed electrologists?
Well, New York is one of them.
New York?
Yes.
The whole state.
The whole state.
That's a big state.
I know, and we have another big one, Texas.
New York and Texas.
Yes.
I would imagine that there are many candidates for electrology in New York and Texas.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that they are not skilled.
So in other words, electrology is still available in those states. It's just that they're not. One does not have to go through a licensing process.
That's correct. But many of the electrologists. Just because they're not licensed doesn't mean that they're not educated properly.
Okay.
Many of them will go to a school in another state or in the state that they live in and will get the proper education. And then they will get a certificate of completion from the school. And then many of them sit for the certified professional exam, the electrology exam that we have. And they usually have that credential after them. But I do want to stress that how could you even think about getting into a follicle unless you didn't have some type of education
learn
how to do that.
Now, it's my understanding, too, that a lot of electrologists become electrologists because they are satisfied clients, that they had struggled with this problem, they sought treatment, they were so pleased with the enormous not just cosmetic results, but the psychosocial results that they decided that they wanted to become that person and help somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And the permanent result, that's the key.
Sarah, I was
exactly one of those people.
That's interesting.
Yes.
So like a way of giving back.
Absolutely.
I
can't tell you, when I got the hair removed, and it was on my abdomen, and it was from my belly button down, and when I got that hair removed, and some on my arms that were bothering me, I was so thrilled. I felt so good about myself and felt, geez, I want to make other people feel this good too.
And a number of clients also, I mean, you know, they develop close relationships, especially if they're working with these women. Oh, the time has just flown by. There's the closing music. I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Ricardo Aziz, who was here earlier, who is the director of the Center for Androgen-Related Disorders at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. He's also executive director of the Androgen Excess Society. And we've just finished a lively discussion with Patsy Kirby, executive director of the American Electrology Association, which can be accessed online at www.electrology.com. For more information on hirsutism, check out my book, Women and Unwanted Hair, which is available on Amazon. Next week, we devote our show to a rare cancer in pregnant women involving tumors of the placenta. Women who want to know more about molar pregnancy, choriocarcinoma, or other tumors of the placenta will want to listen in. We'll be joined by Dr. Susan Modisett, a gynecologic oncologist, as well as the authors of the only book for women on the subject. You can visit me online at sarahhealth.com, and remember, you are not alone.
Thank you for listening to Sara Health Radio. To contact Dr. Rosenthal or one of her guests for more information, visit sarahhealth.com. Tune in next Thursday for another hour of Sara Health Radio with Dr. Sara Rosenthal.